This second experiment is the laser reflector.
Vacuum flashing.
Fringe elements of science. More in terms of whole than looking for patterns of connections and networks.
We found that getting them down produced no significant problems.
Series of important observations to artificially reproduce the light of the aurora and to present science with a summary of new and incontestable facts.
Opening ourselves to phenomena that don't fit into our preconceived notions.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our Celeri report on science and science of the future and science of the present. I have the great joy, honor, and privilege to talk today to Dr. Beverly Rubik, who has recently written an enormously important paper on the question of how the COVID-19 situation might be related to electromagnetic frequencies, including 5G. This is a question that many people are asking themselves. And so we want to today dive into this and look at the very important scientific evidence that has been presented in that work. Beverly, I would like to introduce you to the audience. You have a PhD in biophysics from UC Berkeley, and your scientific interests include consciousness studies, and you are also working a lot on energy medicine and bioelectromagnetics. You study the behavior of water in biological systems, and you are involved very much in the scientific investigation of all the complementary medicines. And you're most known for your pioneering research in the biofield, the energy field of the human body. And you have conducted research on persons such as Qigong masters and Reiki healers, and have looked at what energy effects are coming from their bodies to other bodies or even to physical objects. I think that's correct. I'm fascinated also by your research into the biophoton phenomenon, and you have investigated, just like the German professor Fritz Popp, who I have followed also here in Germany, the emissions of light from the cells, which is quite a groundbreaking research. And you are known and you have done a lot of research in the effect of cell phone radiation, particularly in something that you discovered, namely the effect of this radiation on the blood membrane, on the blood cells. And we will talk about this hopefully during our conversation today. Just a few more points on the history and the background of Dr. Beverly Rubik. She has won several awards, including the Alice and Elmer Green Award in 2009 by the International Society for the Study of Subtle Energies and Energy Medicine, and the Integrity in Science Award by the Weston A. Price Foundation in 2015. And she has published up to 90 scientific papers, including two books entitled Life at the Edge of Science and The Interrelationship Between Mind and Matter, all topics that I personally also am involved in and fascinated by. So I'm so honored to be able to speak to you today, Dr. Rubik. More on your background is necessary to mention, namely your involvement in 1992 to 1997 in the advisory board to the Office of Alternative Medicine at the U.S. National Institute of Health, which is a congressionally appointed program of high-level scientists that advised literally the government institutions. And you have later founded the Institute for Frontier Science in 1996, which is your own laboratory that you are running with other scientists, and that in which you are continuing your study of the biofield in independence and in great openness of the mind. So I think this is showing viewers that you are capable of the scientific method and yet thinking outside of the box and including many of the alternative views of science and medicine. And I think this is an important point that we will be able to make today. Dr. Rubik is professor at Energy Medicine University and adjunct faculty member at California Institute for Human Science. And she today mentors masters and doctoral students at these institutions. And she speaks internationally and has recently, together with a co-author, written a groundbreaking, I think groundbreaking paper on the interrelationship, the possible interrelationship and evidence for this of COVID-19 and electromagnetic frequencies of wireless origin, including 5G. And this is a peer review paper, and I hope we will be able to speak about the peer review process later on. So before we go there, would you like to add something to your biography, or shall we have a look at what is 5G, and just to summarize and to open the topic in this way?
Well, thank you, Ulrike. It's my pleasure to be here with you today, and you've given a very generous introduction. So let's move on.
Okay.
And talk about 5G.
Perfect. So I think it's, even though many people are nowadays aware of 5G, especially our Solari subscribers, however, it is still good to have a little bit of a look at what is 5G and maybe also how is it different from 4G and 3G, the earlier generations of the wireless radiation.
Well, 5G is the fifth generation of cellular telecom protocol. It's really a protocol, and it's also a little bit of a moving target because it's not fully done yet, and engineers come up with slightly new strategies. So there's the latest version that's been published, and that takes us between 600 megahertz and 90 gigahertz. It's a huge bandwidth of different frequencies compared to the earlier versions. And it uses special antennas that are not just broadcasting like standard antennas, like dropping a pebble in a pool and seeing the waves move outward. That's broadcasting. These antennas are phase arrays capable of beam forming and steering the beam so that there will be much higher power densities that will touch users here, there, and everywhere, and constantly flitting from user to user. So it's a very different protocol than broadcasting. They're planning a total coverage of Earth. They want a completely wireless worldwide web and everything that we own to be hooked up to the internet, called the Internet of Things. Now, why would they want this? Well, it seems obvious to me that it's more about total surveillance and control. It's about the ultimate technocracy, where you have everything hooked up to a central network that you can look in on. You can surveil and know who's doing what, and maybe even pull the plug on some users.
Yeah, I think now, that's
also
an important point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and there's also, besides this wireless aspect, there is a wired component of fiber optic cables. Mm-hmm. And that is very safe, where we have light beams traveling along, say, clear glass fibers in mm-hmm. dark cables underground or even up to your office. It's possible to have fiber optic cables even to the premises. But unfortunately, even though they plan that, it seems as though they're going to deliver the last part from the street to the homes and offices and schools as wireless, which mm-hmm. is not so safe, especially mm-hmm. with all these new frequencies and their combinations. We really don't know the effects. Now, 5G requires the densification of 4G. In other words, they're going to have to build millions of new antennas of 4G and 5G and have them space much closer to where we live, go to school and work. Mm-hmm. And that's of concern to me because right now we don't have that right outside our windows. We have these higher frequencies, which also involve millimeter waves, not just microwaves, but up there, millimeter waves, which have even stronger biological effects than the lower frequencies of 3G and 4G. And they're really in the radar range of military applications. The military had to give up some bandwidth mm-hmm. for this 5G to be deployed, which actually is a military word. The deployment of a weapon comes to mind when they use such language.
Yeah.
And currently, only military-grade instruments can measure frequencies over 8 gigahertz. Mm. So the people don't have a meter at this time to even know what is blasting them, what is their exposure here and there in their environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's extremely important for people to know that we have our devices for high frequency radiation as well as the low frequency coming from the electricity lines in the walls, but we don't have devices, the normal person, for these gigahertz frequencies to measure. And yet we can see even recently there were reports that, as you were mentioning, the military grade weapon type of use of 5G or origin of 5G, that they were using them for crowd control in Australia with the trucker movement going to Brisbane. So it's actually very, very close to all of us, and it affects us, and it's going to affect us very much. So how has the safety of it all been ascertained so far? Is if everything is going to be deployed with 5G, is it safe at all, or do we have reason to fear that there will be an impact, and as your article also is showing, on health and well-being?
Well, actually, there are no safety standards anywhere in the world for wireless communication radiation. We only have guidelines, and the guidelines differ from country to country. And as it turns out, the United States and Canada have some of the highest limits on public exposure. Mm. Other countries have lesser limits, which would, in my opinion, be safer. But right now we have no studies whatsoever on 5G. Mm-hmm. There was an interesting hearing that Senator Blumenthal had back in 2019, where he brought in some of the top telecom industries and he asked them, what studies do we have showing that this is safe? And they said, well, we don't have any.
Wow.
And he said, well, how is that possible? Well, because legally they're going according to the FCC in the US, which is the Federal Communications Commission, the organization of six people, none of them health or medical experts, all of them engineers, and mostly in with a past history of working in the telecom industry. They're in control of so-called guidelines and dishing out the bandwidth to different industries and the military, et cetera. And so the industry has to simply go by whatever the FCC says. But the FCC is really a captured agency. This means that basically their industrial representatives that have left industry to join the FCC to do really the work that the industry wants. And there's only six of them. And as I said, there's nobody who has a background in health science among them, sadly.
Wow.
And so they do what the industry wants.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really have enough studies. Yes, there are a lot of studies on individual frequencies with animals. There's even some studies on, let's say, workers among radio frequencies, but there are no real world studies on 5G type devices with their rapid, very rapid digital pulsations and unique modulations, many of which are proprietary. You can't even find out what they are to run the studies yourself. And so there's all of this that has occurred in the 5G field. And there are thousands of studies showing non-thermal effects, not just heating effects at higher power densities, but lower level power that causes non-thermal effects, meaning not tissue heating, but more subtle effects on humans and other organisms.
Yeah,
so we have guidelines.
I think this is the main one of the important points also, because most of the standards are only placed on tissue heating. In the with the old standards was 3G and 4G. 5G doesn't go so deep into the skin, but it has much more power. And if the tissue heating doesn't occur like the standards is, but there are other effects, that there may be communicative effects or pulsations, as you say, the modulations, I think this will be a much more of a problem.
Well, also the extent of 5G, the worldwide aspect, the bringing 42,000 to 100,000 emitting satellites in lower Earth orbit, blasting the entire Earth to create this wireless worldwide web, and millions more antennas and base stations that are also emitters, drastically terraforms Earth from its God-given natural electromagnetic environment to something completely different, with this digitally pulsating electromagnetic fields that life didn't evolve in, and humans have never been exposed to 24/7 for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, life did not evolve in microwave radiation. This is screened by the Earth's atmosphere. There is, of course, higher frequency radiation from the cosmos, but the atmosphere screens it, and life has evolved actually in this womb of the Earth, shielded and screened from these more destructive radiations. And now we are producing them inside of the atmosphere, and there is bound to be some effect.
Well, effect on humans as well as the environment. And even though there are laws in the United States say, that go back to the 1960s that say any major change in the environment requires an environmental impact review, this has not been done whatsoever, as Senator Blumenthal found out, nor have there been adequate safety studies that look either at short-term or long-term effects from the specific protocols of these 5G networks. And that really concerns me. We have the idea of cumulative daily radiation for the rest of our lives due to this enormous multi-trillion dollar infrastructure that's being planned and right now starting to be implemented, which concerns not only me, but many scientists and medical doctors worldwide. There are various organizations of people like myself who want to stop this. They want to put a moratorium on it until we learn more about the safety, because we do know from the literature on non-thermal effects that there are a plethora of effects from the level of genes, the level of even DNA damage and mutations, to altered gene expression, to reduced sperm count in men, fertility problems, detrimental effects on the development of fetuses and children, neurological changes, because the brain, of course, is one of the biggest emitters of brain waves, and it will be impacted very seriously by any artificial fields, as will the heart, another great electromagnetic emitter from the human body. So we can expect neurological as well as heart impacts, learning and memory deficits, and then there's oxidative stress, the formation of more free radical substances in the body that can damage any tissue. It's been known to be a human carcinogen, In fact, stated by the World Health Organization itself back in 2011, it's registered as a class 2B human carcinogen, and it's known to be a causative factor in a brain cancer called glioma, which is one of the most deadly tumors, and acoustic neuromas. Mm-hmm. And we have a couple of key frequencies already used or going to be used in 5G. In the present Wi-Fi, they're using 2.45 gigahertz, mm-hmm. which, by the way, is the same frequency used in microwave ovens, mm-hmm. used to heat water and cook food. Yeah. And we are organisms made of water, so are all life on Earth. So it's like being in a low-level microwave oven to be near wireless routers. And in fact, some of my recent research, not yet published, I'm looking at the effect of Wi-Fi routers on people just 5 or 10 minutes exposure, 2 meters away from routers. I already see changes in the blood that are adverse and unhealthy. Wow. Just 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's excellent. And then we imagine all the people sitting in their offices, in their cubicles, surrounded by Wi-Fi, or people at home nowadays. We can no longer live without the tablets and the smartphones and have the Wi-Fi on. We think we need to be connected all the time at night. This is a constant prison of radiation in which we place ourselves.
And of course, during the pandemic, where we couldn't get together as much, we were in isolation and lockdowns and masked, we use more and more wireless ways of communicating, mm-hmm. going on video conferences, mm-hmm. and using our cell phones and texts more than ever, and conditioning ourselves to use these things more than previously. Mm-hmm. 60 gigahertz is another interesting frequency that will be in the 5G rollout. Mm-hmm. Why are they using this when we know that this is one of the peaks of oxygen absorption? Yep. How is that going to impact our breathing or the transport of oxygen in the body by hemoglobin in the blood?
Yes.
We don't even know the consequences of this, but it's important, they say, to stop local area networks so that the oxygen will absorb the particular network frequencies and won't get beyond, say, a household. And that will render your wireless network more private. Mm-hmm. But frankly, it could all be done with wires. There's no need for this kind of the use of a frequency that's really quite questionable when it comes to our health and our breath, the breath of life.
And also the environment, if we have the oxygen interfered with so much, if there is the satellites, if there is from the ground these emitters in the 60 gigahertz and beyond range, then there is bound to be also an interaction in the atmosphere. And whatever that may, maybe there is reduction of oxygen in the air, more to be expected and things like that. So yeah, there's lots of consequences.
Well, I have to say, I try to make an exhaustive medical and scientific research on this question. And it seems that there are no known ways of this interaction. We don't know how the 60 gigahertz is going to impact the breath of life on Earth. Mm-hmm. That simply is not in the open literature. I looked upwards and downwards, and mm-hmm. I'm very concerned about it. Mm-hmm. Another thing we know about wireless is that it disrupts the blood-brain barrier. Both 3G, 4G, and probably 5G will continue to allow substances into our brains that otherwise could not get in. Toxins like glyphosate used in agriculture as herbicides and also pesticides we'll be getting into our brains, and synergistically, this cannot be good. We have first the impact of wireless directly on the brain, and now the introduction of chemical toxins into the brain that could not get in previously because of this blood-brain barrier, now disrupted, and multiple toxins entering the brain, playing havoc with our central nervous system. We don't even know the effect of that. Yet.
There may be effects on also the rise of Alzheimer's diseases and dementia due to the rollout of all of these various frequencies. And I also am concerned as to what will happen in the future once this is in place and once the satellites beam constantly. And what will this mean? We can talk later about what we might have to expect also in terms of possible scenarios of continued pandemics in the future, perhaps based on all what you're going to show us also in your article once we talk about this.
Yes. Just a few more things on the safety issues. You know, pregnant women, the fetus in the womb, young children who are developing, the elderly are some of the most vulnerable populations to these frequencies, and especially developing organisms, children and fetuses. And I hate to see children with cell phones up like this, or given like a pacifier, a tablet to entertain them. It's totally wrong. We should not expose young children to wireless in such ways. But people are doing this completely unconscious of the effects on the child's development, sadly. Now, it's not just the carrier frequency of the microwave or the millimeter wave that's disruptive. It's also the modulation. The waves carry information because they're pulsed. It's sort of like the Morse code, you know, dots and dashes, and modulated. In other words, they carry other frequencies like FM radio and AM radio, frequency modulated and amplitude modulated radio. That's how it can carry information. And so it's the modulations of these microwaves and millimeter waves that are actually most biologically active and most biologically hazardous, because the living systems themselves operate in these ELF or extremely low frequency modes, and they directly interfere with natural biological rhythms.
So the modulations on these pulses, they are from in the ELF range, in the extremely low frequency range, and that then communicates in a way we don't know, or a message we don't know, with the biological system. Very important.
That's exactly right. So we have the effect of the carrier waves themselves, and we have the effect of the modulations, and we have to think about not just single devices like cell phones, but there's also the routers, there's smart meters, there's a plethora. And when the Internet of Things gets going, everything will have a unique modulation and digital pulsation. And how is that overlap of all of these devices, that signal that will then reach our bodies? What kind of biological effects is that going to have on our health? Yes. That's a totally big unknown question that nobody has ever studied. They often look at a single device like I have in my studies. Let's take a look at 4G cell phones, or let's take a look at the Wi-Fi router. But in reality, we're all exposed to a lot of things all at once. And that's a big confusing informational signal then coming into our biofields and thwarting them.
As people know, I've also produced a report on the wave genome, and it's actually based on the reality that DNA and actually all processes in the body are of electromagnetic nature. So we are also interacting electromagnetically as natural organisms with all other organisms around us. And so when there is now new frequencies, electromagnetic information, there would be a natural way of picking this up. We have antennas, the DNA could be seen as a fractal antenna to pick up these frequencies. So there's a lot of chaos and cacophony that the environment provides us now with in terms of frequencies. And it's very, very confusing to the cell and to the organism.
Well, here's a little analogy that I make so that people might understand it. If I were to go to the light switch and turn it on and off and on and off in some random sequence, your eyes would rebel and say, mm-hmm. I can't stand it. Mm-hmm. Either turn it on or turn it off already and give me continuous light, mm-hmm. because I'm an analog being and I'm used to signals that are continuous or slowly changing, mm-hmm. but I'm not used to, and I'm not built for frequencies that only devices can manage mm-hmm. to extract information from. No living organism can adapt to such drastically pulsating and modulated signals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. That's what they found also with the LED lights with certain frequency. There's a switch on and switch off. It can be quite detrimental to the brain, can create, you know, even suicidal situations. So another group of people, by the way, that is very concerned about the effects and the lack of safety standards with 5G is the pilot associations, and also the whole the air traffic controlling, because there is bound to be, they are expecting high level of interference, especially with the altimeters, with the landing and with the autopilot system on the planes. And I think this has brought more awareness recently to several people, as you have also experienced, Isid.
Yes, I noticed that people who poo-pooed the notion that 5G would be a problem are suddenly waking up to this rather drastic problem, that maybe in all the airports, that certain types of airplanes in particular have these radio altimeters mm-hmm. that may be jammed or thwarted by 5G signals. Mm-hmm. So some airports are actually clearing out the 5G wireless infrastructure around them in order that these planes can land safely. Yeah. But I don't think it's been totally worked out yet. Mm-hmm. And I would be concerned as a pilot about this, and even as somebody who flies frequently.
Yeah,
is it safe?
Especially since pilots are saying that there's new laws and new technology in the planes that does not allow the autopilot to be switched off by the pilot. So that means they are at the mercy of the technology, and it's now being interfered with by these frequencies. So it's quite perilous, to say the least. So what can we do, Beverly? Is there something people can do to protect themselves? And what should they, what is the first measures you would take?
Well, one of the things we've done is, because we're often asked to do so, even within our own hometown, is a 5G antenna went up and near a senior center, say in Oakland, California. And I'm asked to come over and measure and see if it's within specifications of the SEC guidelines or whether they have a case against the telecom industry. So we go and we measure, and we find out that people's greatest exposure is not so much from these new antennas being placed outside their homes and schools, but in fact, from the very appliances that they have and they're using in their own homes, the wireless devices like their wireless router, their wireless or DECT phone, as it's called, the wireless landline phones, and their bases are big emitters, even more so than smartphones and smart meters. They have a bunch of devices. Even wireless keyboards and mice attached to their computers are blasting them with Wi-Fi in many cases, and they're totally unaware of it, and they sit in front of these devices all day. This is their greatest exposure, and this is something people can do something about. First, they need to measure what they've got, and it's not that hard to operate an RF, a radio frequency meter, or to purchase a couple of $100 what's called a tri-field meter that measures not only radio frequency, but electric fields and magnetic fields, and turn it on the radio frequency mode and move it around where you spend time in your home, in your personal environment, and see what you're exposed to. And then see what you can do about moving these wireless devices away from you. I've seen professor friends of mine, they should know better, but they've got their wireless router about within a meter of their own heads, sitting right next to their computer on a desktop. And then they've suffered things like strokes, sad to say. And I've pointed these things out, and things like that should never be that close to the body. These are powerful emitters. They should be as far as possible away from where people spend time in their homes and businesses.
So important, Beverly. Thank you for pointing this out. Both you and I, we are advisors. I'm also advising people in and making measurements. And once you have seen this, that it's actually in your own home, you don't need to measure any longer. You just know you don't use the Bluetooth devices. You don't use the wireless only when you really need it and you switch it on and off each time. And certainly not at night, because this is just too powerful for the body to be constantly bombarded by this, the glands, the organs, the blood, as we will see.
Well, yes, and we can substitute wires. It's quite possible to go back to, and I've had continuously wired internet. I never stepped up to wireless because I said it doesn't make sense. It's not as fast as wired. It's hackable. I want to be safe and keep my network private. So I'm quite happy with wired internet, and I hope it's continuing.
Yes.
But we can return to wires in many cases. A lot of it is a fad, this wireless thing. You don't need a wireless mouse and a wireless keyboard on a desktop computer that's stationary.
Yes.
What's the point? The point is you're exposing your major organs to these radiations. I myself purchased a desktop computer, and it came with a wireless keyboard and mouse. And after hours sitting at this computer, I started to get palpitations in my heart. And then I became aware that, you know, I had these wireless accessories. What was I thinking of? I went out and bought a wired mouse and a wired keyboard, and sure enough, my palpitations went away. And yet other people I know my age are running off to get a pacemaker implanted because they have some heart arrhythmias. Doctors don't know about these things, and they're not advising people appropriately. They're medicating them or doing drastic procedures like inserting a pacemaker, which is a surgical procedure in the heart, when it actually may be that their exposure to wireless is simply interfering
too
with
much.
The heartbeat.
Yes. There's also magnetic fields from the electricity, especially from the electricity, the stronger cables where the electricity enters the house. It's also important to look at the magnetic emissions because they are very affecting the, especially the blood, the iron in the blood.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing people can be measuring if they get the tri-field meter, which allows magnetic measurements, radio frequency, and electric. They can also use shielding. They can wear shielded clothing, which is never 100% blocking, but it blocks some of it. It's possible to paint the home, either exterior or interior, with special paint that also blocks radio frequency in case they're going to install one of these antennas close to your home. There are things that you can do. It's also helpful to walk barefoot on Mother Earth to do what we call earthing or grounding. And the earth is rich in electrons, and we can really boost our natural energy. It's really a great antioxidant to set foot barefoot on Mother Earth.
Yes, exactly. There's a whole movement that is walking barefoot for health, and incurable diseases were gone once people began to do that. So this is most fascinating, and for some people they may know all of this already. But how then? Let's get into the research that you have done, especially in connection with the coronavirus pandemic, and why you felt, or what brought you to the conclusion and to your work that this is connected to this electromagnetic frequency question.
Well, as COVID seemed to be a new disease, I started reading the medical literature, and 2020 to figure out, well, what is this disease? Is it serious? Should we be concerned? And it seemed to be initially a respiratory illness and even have a signature of pneumonia or hypoxia, a lack of oxygen. But soon we realized it was really more of a vascular disease where blood clots became dominant, disseminated intravascular clotting, which is clotting throughout the body and in small vessels, was part of it. So it wasn't a conventional respiratory disease so much as something really novel. And, you know, my co-author, Rob Brown, is a radiologist. So he was looking at x-rays and seeing new phenomena. He's quite an experienced radiologist after 30 years. And he said, I've never seen this before. And it isn't a standard pneumonia. And there are things, there are blood clots in young people that we've never seen at such levels before. And that was part of the picture of COVID-19 as it became clear over time. Now, I had done a study back in 2014 on people exposed to a smartphone in a controlled study in my laboratory. So they came in with fasted because I was going to look at freshly drawn blood from the fingertip. And it's better to be fasted than look at a lot of fat floating around in the blood. And they did not touch a cell phone or a wireless device for a couple of hours. And then I looked at their blood at baseline and registered what that was like. In all cases, people looked normal and healthy and were, in fact, not ill. And then I had them wear a smartphone placed in a backpack for just 45 minutes. It was turned on, but not being used by them. And then I looked at the blood again. And sure enough, there were morphological changes in the blood. The blood cells were sticky. The red blood cells were stuck together in formations we call rouleaux, which mm-hmm. is the French word for rolls, mm-hmm. like a stack of coins looking on edge, and also other more disregular piles of red blood cells. But they're not
actually,
able
perhaps
to...
we can quickly look at this paper that you published and the pictures of it. If I can share my screen for a moment, because this is quite interesting to people, and I think it's possible to explain a few things along this line. Here is the paper that you published 2014-2015, and it's an excellent research paper with this controlled study in your own laboratory. And it's called, Does Short-Term Exposure to Cell Phone Radiation Affect the Blood? And here are the pictures or the results. So you spoke of the baseline. This is a beautiful blood count from a very healthy person with each of the blood cells separate. Perhaps you want to explain better than I can.
Well, we're looking at in dark field microscopy so that the edges of the cells are lit. And you can see all of the round, healthy looking uniform cells, and also the spaces between the cells, which are clean and dark, the plasma, mm-hmm. Largely clean and dark. And this is healthy blood. This is about as good as it gets.
Mm-hmm. And here we have what you mentioned as after 45 minutes of wearing a backpack with a switched on cell phone. That's all.
Yes. And now we're looking at no more single red blood cells. They're all stuck together in rouleau formations and aggregates. And there's also a little bit of fiber and a little bit of white threads seen in the plasma, which is a sign of early blood clotting. Mm-hmm. So this is the picture of early stages of blood clotting where red cells have come together. They would do this in a clot to prevent the flow of blood. When you have a wound, the cells become sticky, and that's some of the first stages of blood clotting. And then this fibrin, this white thread forms in the plasma as seen here. So this is an example of what I saw just after 45 minutes exposure of a person wearing a smartphone in a backpack, not using it, but the cell phone was turned on, ready for use. And a lot of people are wearing or putting cell phones in pockets on the body.
Yes.
And so it's not unusual. 45 minutes of this is frankly,
yeah, it's
quite
normal.
Typical.
Yeah, you don't even think of it. And here's a third picture that is described in the text as the actual use of the cell phone for a few minutes, speaking or talking. And there is very strange alterations in the blood cells to be seen.
So now the aggregates of Rouleau broke up, but we mm-hmm. see more distortion in the red blood cell membrane. What has happened are spikes sticking out of the red blood cell. Mm. These little protuberances are really, the cells have balled up. Normally they're a biconcave disc, and now they become spheres with spikes on them. And they can't travel very well either through the tiniest microcapillaries, nor can the Rouleau, depriving the body of circulation, depriving the body of oxygen deep in tissues throughout the body.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I see when people use the smartphone for just 45 minutes, holding it in the hand, making a couple minute phone calls, holding it close to the ear, but largely texting and looking at videos. Typical use, you might say, that people have in an airport on their cell phones.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
And so we see drastic changes in the blood. And 9 out of 10 people in the study showed this, even some young people, but especially the 50-year-olds and up show profound changes in the morphology of the red blood cells following simply exposure to the cell phone not being used or active use of the cell phone, holding it in the hand.
Mm-hmm. 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 So this was in 2014, and it made you realize, I guess, since you saw that there is a vascular component to the COVID-19, that there may be a connection.
Vascular component, and also that would possibly exacerbate things like or promote hypoxia. Mm-hmm. If blood cannot circulate very well in the body,
mm-hmm.
Then oxygen is not delivered and carbon dioxide is not removed. In other words, respiration is inhibited. And so as we learned that the ventilators weren't helping people in yeah. hospitals, they actually were thwarting them. The problem was deeper than simple pneumonia in the lungs. The problem seemed to be in the blood and vessels. And again, my study on 4G cell phones suggested that exposure to wireless, whether it be 4G or the coming 5G, might be exacerbating this new illness, this COVID, and possibly contributing to the pandemic and its spread, at least early on. So I began to comb the literature then. What other common grounds from the symptomatology and disease progression in COVID-19 and from the adverse bioeffects of wireless, what other commonalities might there be between those two things? That's what I did. And Rob Brown and I worked on this together and did a literature review. We found 5 areas of commonality between let's say, exacerbating the progression and symptomatology of COVID-19 and wireless adverse bioeffects already in the literature from thousands of researchers on all continents, thousands of papers really on the non-thermal effects of the radiation exposure that showed an intersection.
Shall we show your paper also to the audience?
Sure.
I think that would be interesting. I have it here on a PDF. So here, this is the paper. I've highlighted a few things. This is the title of the paper is Evidence for a Connection Between Coronavirus Disease 19 and Exposure to Radiofrequency Radiation from Wireless Communications, Including 5G. Dr. Beverly Rubik, Dr. Robert Brown. You did a literature research in this, you said?
Well, one of the things I realized soon enough was that even on the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's website, it says that there's an epidemiological triangle of causation in disease. And that involves the agent, in this case, purportedly a virus, the health of the host, whether there are pre-existing conditions that might make them more susceptible to a disease, and also the environment. But the official narrative focused virtually entirely on the virus and certainly did not discuss the environment. In some cases, they discuss comorbidity of diabetes and obesity and some other factors, but the environment had never been addressed in the official narrative. And then we have to consider a couple of circumstantial things. Wuhan, China was one of China's model 5G cities, and the rollout was late October 2019, a couple of months really before the onset of the pandemic, supposedly in Wuhan. Now, is this just a coincidence or what? But then some other researchers had shown a significantly statistical relationship between the initial spread of the pandemic and partial 5G implementation in certain sections of the world, namely cities like Seattle, the Silicon Valley region, Southern California, New York City, Northern Italy, South Korea, and other places where 5G had been partly implemented were regions where the pandemic initially spread. Is that a coincidence when one sees a statistically significant relationship? So we had already some geographical evidence from others that fits in also with our thesis here. And we had adduced some five manifestations between the adverse effects of wireless radiation and the symptomatology and progression of COVID. And here they are in a table.
Yes, this is from the article. But just once again to emphasize the timing of the rolling out of massive 5G antennas and the beginning of the COVID-19 symptoms in Wuhan, I think it's extremely important. And I was just looking for this article also, and there is a picture in your peer review process that we want to go through for a moment also afterwards, that shows the coincidence between 5G antennas and application and the number of cases of COVID-19, especially early on.
Yes, especially the early spread of the pandemic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We feel the 5G partial rollout here and there worldwide contributed to it. Mm-hmm. And so here are the five corresponding changes or adverse effects of wireless on the left and COVID-19 manifestations on the right. So I've already discussed the blood rather thoroughly, the formation of aggregates, rouleau, and also these spiky cells that cannot travel through the microcapillary system and would thwart circulation and contribute to conditions such as hypoxia, the lack of oxygen that people experienced in COVID, especially more serious cases. Now, we know also from studies on wireless that long-term exposure reduces the hemoglobin in the blood and even the numbers of red blood cells. And that was also found in more severe cases of COVID, reduced hemoglobin and reduced red blood cells. Even these very formations, these morphological changes that I saw, the rouleau and echinocytes were found in about one third of COVID patients, according to some papers. So there seemed to be a direct case for the blood effects as perhaps the strongest correlation between adverse effects of wireless and symptomatology of COVID. The other ones are less clear, but nonetheless also contributing. Oxidative stress, whereby you have more free radical formation. This is also clear in COVID. And glutathione levels, glutathione being the master antioxidant in the body, primarily in the liver, that's detoxifying these free radicals. The levels decrease both from wireless exposure and in COVID. And so some of the damage in the COVID syndrome is due to oxidative stress. It isn't just direct viral damage, it's more chemical damage from this stress. And also in wireless exposure, it's one of the mechanisms that we believe to be operating and contributing to effects from the level of DNA all the way up to organ dysfunction, because it impacts tissue at all levels, molecularly and all the way up.
And it impacts the energy production, doesn't it, in the ATP cycle?
Yes, yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So energy would go down as well. Mm-hmm. And the third category here is the immune system disruption and activation. The interesting thing about wireless is that it can suppress the immune system in some studies, but over the long term, it can also activate. Mm-hmm. And it depends on the frequency modulations and pulsations. The specific waveform is critical. So it can do both. It's also known to suppress T lymphocytes. And all these same things are found in COVID. And certainly if you suppress the immune system, well, then you're apt to get a virus more readily. And in COVID, we see also this hyperactivation of the immune system in the more serious cases, whereby people get even cytokine storms, where they literally attack their own tissue strongly with immune modulators, special molecules that are trying to really rid you of the virus, but also doing a lot of tissue damage. And so organ injury and organ failure can actually result, and that is the cause of some of the deaths from COVID. Organ injury can also result from wireless effects on the immune system too. A fourth category is the increased intracellular calcium. And Dr. Martin Paul is one of the researchers who promoted this several years ago in a landmark publication, that voltage-gated calcium channels are impacted by microwave radiation, and thereby more calcium enters the cells. Calcium is normally highly regulated because it's such an important second messenger that has a wide plethora of biological effects. So now it's getting into the cells more readily and, again, doing many things as a result. But we know from the literature on viruses is that intracellular calcium is absolutely critical to the virus getting into human cells, to replicating itself, and then being released so it can get into yet other human cells and spread the infection around the body. So it's also pro-inflammatory, leading to a coagulation, thrombosis, and some of the clotting problems with COVID as well.
Well, that's almost like a logical thing, that any increased radiation on a patient, but especially in hospitals or at home, would then help the virus to enter, if this is the case. This is quite profound on the voltage gate.
And many viruses actually have a mechanism to exacerbate calcium entry so that they can multiply and do what they need to do. But wireless also promotes this. So this is a direct link again between viral diseases and Wi-Fi exposure. And the fifth category are the effects on the heart. Certainly, the stress response is aggravated by exposure to wireless. What we call the sympathetic nervous system is hyperactivated in a chronic way, which is very unhealthy and can also lead to arrhythmias and palpitations in the heart, among other effects that are not good for you. And correspondingly, in COVID, we see everything from arrhythmias to heart attacks, cardiac failure, and myocarditis, inflammation of the heart tissue.
Interestingly, also the aspects that we see from the vaccines or the injections, we can talk later about this a little bit if you want. But this is a very, very convincing table and symmetry of effects between the wireless and between all of the COVID-19 manifestations that also convinced, I believe, those scientists that did the peer review of your paper, which would you like to go there that we are also talking about the peer review process of your paper. Would you like to talk about your experience with the whole publication process and the peer
review?
Yes,
because it was very unusual, and I've published almost 100 scientific papers.
Yeah.
I'm an experienced scientific researcher and understand this process very well. And during the COVID crisis of 2020, a lot of papers were going that dealt with COVID were going on preprint servers, medical preprint servers. These are not peer reviewed, but places to quickly air your paper. So because it was apparently a crisis, an emergency situation, and scientists and medical doctors need to read the latest research. Mm-hmm. So that's the purpose of a preprint server. It's a place where papers just normally go without any censorship for certain. Well, I found three preprint servers would not take our paper. They outright rejected it based on the title and topic. And I was amazed because this is like a censorship at a very early stage when other papers on all sorts of varieties related to COVID were freely placed on these preprint servers. And so finally we found one, the Center for Open Science, that allowed us to upload our paper. And we had about 10,000 downloads over a few months. So there was quite a lot of interest in our paper. And then I submitted the paper to medical journal for publication, actually several of them, because again, and I had published papers in these journals prior. So I was known by the editors, but amazingly, the senior editor outright rejected our paper, would not put it through peer review, based again on the title and the topic.
That's
they said they couldn't handle it, you know, and so that's that. So finally, I found a journal that was willing to peer review it. And I later found that 48 scientists were asked to do the peer review. Again, amazing number, because normally
that's
it's
a huge number.
It's absolutely huge. Normally, it's up to five reviewers.
Yeah.
I never in my life have heard of anything like this. And of those 48, some 12 consented. Even that's an enormous number of reviewers.
Yeah.
And led to an enormous amount of peer review and rebuttal. We wrote altogether between the peer review and our rebuttal, it amounted to 72 pages of material for a paper that was only about 16 pages long in the journal. Again, an extraordinary amount of work, and in three rounds of peer review. I've never seen that before either, where researchers also brought in new questions on subsequent rounds of the review. Again, not typical at all. And I was wondering, is this going to be published, or is this editor, whom I did not know, just having fun with us and then going to throw this thing out?
I see.
Not knowing where we were going, and the discouragement of my co-author, I said, we've got to stick with this. It may be our only chance. And time is moving along, and this pandemic may be over, and then our paper much less relevant. So we stuck with it.
Dr. Rubik, I think your paper is more relevant now. After, you know, now that we are open to all the side effects, and we have experienced so much, and now we can relate it with a clearer eye. I think that the timeliness is just divinely guided.
You know, Ulrika, I agree with you. I see that as well, because what was interesting, and we didn't know any of this in 2020 when we wrote this, is that the vaccine would involve an encodement for a part of the virus that was actually as toxic as the disease itself.
Yes.
We had no clue.
Yes.
And so the relevance of our paper today is not just for COVID-19, the disease, but for, shall we say, the adverse effects of the injections.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
This is, we will touch upon this. I will share once again the screen, because I have had the peer review process open, and I think it's educational for, you know, most of us are lay people, not scientists who have published 90 and 100 papers in peer review journals and go through this process. Of how this is done, And I think it's quite fascinating to see. So it had several revisions. You can see the dates here. And as you said, 16 pages of article goes into 72 pages of discussion. It never ends. This is your replies, the red one. And then the peer reviewers, the scientists, high-level scientists, who come with their questions and comments and sometimes even suggestions. What I noticed about the peer review process here, I felt that despite the lengthy process and so many people doing it, I found it was actually very supportive and there was a huge interest. That's what I felt from reading all the comments.
Well, yes, I would say most of the reviewers actually were supportive. There were a mm-hmm. couple who even said, there is no relationship between COVID-19 and wireless, and that's that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think their names appeared. They weren't probably willing to put their names on the review list mm-hmm. that yeah. the journal published as well. But I'm happy that this peer review and rebuttal was expressed in mm-hmm. the journal. I mm-hmm. don't expect a lot of people to read it, but it was quite an educational experience. Mm-hmm. And we did substantial rewriting and added a lot of references. And we're able to update our paper because it now extended into 2021 when there was even some more data that had been revealed that mm-hmm. we could add, as well as more references. And one main thing was the reviewers asked us to back off on our rather firm conclusions. We had concluded that we felt the evidence was strong that exposure to wireless and the adverse effects of it strongly contributed to the pandemic and exacerbation of COVID-19. But we were forced to back off on a strong conclusion and make it more hypothetical.
Okay.
And so in our discussion section of the paper, we clearly stated that this is not pointing to causation, mm-hmm. but we then also gave an indication of a couple of experiments or studies, one clinical study and one laboratory study on humanized rodents that could be done to prove causation. For example, mm-hmm. humanized mice who could get sick from SARS-CoV-2 virus could mm-hmm. be exposed to it, and then they could be set into, say, four groups. One group getting zero Wi-Fi. They're in a Faraday cage where wireless radiation does not penetrate. Another group getting a low dose, then a medium dose, and a high dose. And mm-hmm. we could see, in fact, whether the dose of Wi-Fi radiation would exacerbate the yes. severity of the disease and the extent of disease in, say, cages of mice
yes.
exposed to the virus. That would be a definitive experiment showing causation. Yes. It's very hard to show causation of disease in humans.
Of course.
Because, yes. And nobody really wants to do those experiments because they don't want to be exposed to agents like viruses. So yeah. we understand that. And but a mice model or a rat model could be done mm-hmm. if somebody ever wants to do that. And it might be useful because I suspect other viruses and possibly future pandemics could be influenced by the adverse bioeffects of Wi-Fi exposure. We have to be ready for that. And by the way, I've had some interesting correspondence from people who had COVID who then read my paper or summaries of it on news stories. And they said, you know what? I had COVID and during my disease, when I had my cell phone closer to my body, I felt worse. And I learned quickly to move it away. And I found, now, even though that's just anecdotal, it was
yes.
very interesting to receive communications from people who had experienced the very thing that we had hypothesized in this paper.
Mm, yeah, wonderful. You know, I think we could go on a little bit into more of a speculative discussion if you want. That we have covered the scientific basis very well, and people are advised to read your article. But we wanted to cover most of it here, so not everybody is able to or interested in reading scientific literature. It's easier to listen and in a conversation like this. But perhaps we can also go into a little bit of a more, you know, a discussion of what could follow.